Making TV special.
Venice. Made with creamy butter. Yeah.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Play. Sir.
Kayla's in the building.
Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come to the show.
All on your soul and put whips up on your back. They be lying through they teeth. Hope you slip up off your path. I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they desk, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on they ass. See, that's how that shit down made me. That's how my daddy raised me. That glittering may not be gold. Don't let nobody play me. If you are my homeboy, you never have to pay me. Go on and put your hands up. When times is hard, you stand up. L.U.P. the man, cause a brand that the fans trust. So even if they ban, I still never slow my plans up. Two in the air for the father that's there. Three in the air for the kids in the ghetto. Four for the kids that don't wanna be there. None for the niggas tryna hold him back. Five in the air for the teachers not scared to tell those kids that's living in the ghetto that the niggas holding back, that the world is theirs. Yeah, yeah, the world is yours. I was once that little boy, terrified of the world. Now I'm on a world tour. I will give up everything, even start a world war for these ghetto girls and boys I'm rapping around the world for. Africa to New York, Haiti then I detour. Oakland out to Oakland, Gaza Strip to Detroit. Say hip hop only destroy. Tell them look at me, boy. I hope your son don't have a gun and never be a D-boy. You've been through, no matter what you into, no matter what you see when you look outside your window. Brown grass or green grass, picket fence or barbed wire, never ever put them down. You just lift your arms higher, raise them till your arms tire. Let them know you there, that you struggling, surviving, that you gon' persevere. Yeah, ain't nobody leaving, nobody going home. Even if they turn the lights out, the show is going on. Alright,
welcome, ladies and gentlemen. That was Lupe Fiasco. The show goes on, and it does go on, because here we are, Saturday, June 18th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show media, monarchy.com. This is the B-side to episode 221, which just happened yesterday, but there is so very much going on that we already have put down on all the kingdom of sites. And we're going to continue where we left off at the end of that show, where we ended with a clip of Lupe Fiasco on Rap Radar saying that to him, the biggest terrorist is Obama. And he is correct at this moment because he's the figurehead and we put all our hopes and dreams on him. This episode is being recorded from the home studios of MediaMonarchy.com in the dreary climes of Portland, Oregon. And let's get to it. The Heavy Cost of the Bush Obama Murder Rampage, a new piece up on lewrockwell.com, and an older bit as we are kind of collecting everything that kind of went on while we were on our two-week hiatus at the beginning of June. And that would, of course, be Wienergate, and we, at that point, included just a single headline that he couldn't say with certitude that a lewd picture was not of him, but now, of course, he's resigned and yada yada, the show goes on. John Edwards' case puts Rachel Mellon in the spotlight. I saw this in the print edition of the New York Times, and this actually goes back to Friday, June 4th. Rachel Mellon, now 100 years old and long one of the richest women in America, has lived a life of maximum discretion and minimum exposure. Even in her prime in the 60s, when she redesigned the White House Rose Garden for her friend Jacqueline Kennedy, she avoided the public eye. So it was a rude shock to her social strata when Mrs. Mellon, known chiefly for her passion for horticulture, she's collected more than 10,000 books on botany, and her decorum, became ensnared in the protracted scandal surrounding John Edwards, the former Democratic candidate for president. Mr. Edwards was indicted by a federal grand jury on Friday, June 4th, on charges that he violated campaign finance laws in an effort to conceal an extramarital affair while running for president in 2008, mainly by using $725,000 given to him secretly by Mrs. Mellon. Mr. Edwards pleaded not guilty and the case is headed for trial. Mrs. Mellon was not named in the indictment. She was referred to as Person C, but is essentially an unindicted co-conspirator. Mrs. Mellon could not be reached for comment, but Ryan Huffman, a decorator from Monroe, North Carolina, who was the conduit for Mrs. Mellon's checks to Mr. Edwards, said he spoke to her after the indictment. She's upset that the whole thing has come to this particular moment. She's standing by Senator Edwards, but is sorry that the government has pursued these charges against him. He said she did not understand why anyone cared. Prosecution and defense officials said they could not discuss the legal implications for Mrs. Mellon, who is known as Bunny. Her lawyer declined to comment, but her team has said that the money was a personal gift and that she had no idea how Mr. Edwards used it. And lawyers not involved in the case said it seemed unlikely that either side would try to compel the 100-year-old Bunny Mellon to appear in the court. Now, just for a brief bit of context, subtext, let's just hit the Mellon family entry on Wikipedia, a wealthy and influential family originally of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, USA, and its vicinity. In addition to the Mellon Bank, they were principally known for their ties to Gulf Oil, Alcoa, and that's the Aluminum Corporation of America, and Coppers, oil and chemical company, as well as their influence on Westinghouse, Heinz, Newsweek, U.S. Steel, and General Motors. The family also founded the National Gallery in both art and funds, claims the longest-serving U.S. Treasury Secretary, and is a patron to the University of Pittsburgh and the Carnegie Mellon University. Carnegie Mellon and its Mellon College of Science is named in honor of the family, as well as for its founder, Andrew Carnegie, who was a close associate of the Mellons. And the show goes on. As I get my pieces together again, we're basically smashing together two massive news purges on MediaMonarchy.com, the June 10th and the June 16th versions, as the tables turn and our cities used to be such a beautiful place. So I'm hopping back and forth just to try and get all this straight. Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign over before it really began. Palin emails released as Gingrich staff flees, one of those from MSNBC, the other from Slate. Meanwhile, Ron Paul says the mainstream is swimming to him and they're not mocking his candidacy anymore. Those from the Los Angeles Times and Raw Story, respectively. We hop over and get the more recent Obama-Saya-related updates. And we tweeted this one out from the Y blog, from the Ticket, in an interview with the Obama-Saya that says his family approves of a one-term presidency, and I just tweeted out that so does my family, so to speak. Following Kennedy, Obama makes historic visit to Puerto Rico, that from the Deutsche Press Agency, and from the New York Times, Obama reaches out to Wall Street donors. Well, that's the hand that feeds, isn't it? U.S. politician Wiener resigns in sex scandal. That's from MSNBC. And then we had the big GOP debate just a few nights ago where Republicans assailed Obama but not each other in the debate. And we do have a clip of a larger compilation of only Dr. Ron Paul's responses and answers to the questions during the debate. So let's just listen to a minute of that.
I want to come to Congressman Paul. You're all here saying the President of the United States is making the economy worse. Has he done one thing? Has he done one thing right when it comes to the economy in this country?
Boy, that's a tough question. No, I can't think of anything, but may I answer the question that you alluded to before about whether or not 5% is too optimistic. No, there's nothing wrong without setting a goal of 5 or 10 or 15% if you have a free market economy. We're trying to unwind a Keynesian bubble that's been going on for 70 years, and you're not going to touch this problem until you liquidate the bad debt and the malinvestment, go back to work. But you have to have sound money. You have to recognize how we got into trouble. We got into trouble because we had a financial bubble, and it's caused by the Federal Reserve. If you don't look at monetary policy, we will continue the trend of the last decade. We haven't developed any new jobs in the last decade. Matter of fact, we've had 30 million new people and no new jobs. It's because people don't understand monetary policy and central economic planning. Free markets will give you 10 or 15% growth or whatever, and you will not have to turn it off because you think it's going to cause inflation.
And that's John King of CNN chomping at the bit to cut Dr. Ron Paul off. And that's the fascinating thing that surrounds all of this. And I referenced yesterday on the show that a good friend of mine, and we've been tweeting back and forth this after this debate, he's asking me, is this still your boy? Do you still support this guy? And I said, yeah, I guess so, but not nearly as much as I would have 4 years ago, and not nearly as much as I would like to now if it were on a third party, or no party affiliation would be even better. But isn't it fascinating how well Paul's showing was apparently in this debate, that most of the audience thought he won and yada yada. And we do actually even have, just from this morning, he won a New Orleans straw poll. And that's again on twitter.com/media monarchy, your place for the more recent updates and humorous, funny, all around things going on our Twitter feed. But anyway, you would think Bachman or Romney or those folks had kind of won, quote unquote, that debate. It's still fascinating how much the media does kind of go out of its way to avoid talking about Ron Paul, because talking about Ron Paul means you kind of have to talk about some of those issues that he talks about. So again, that full 15-minute long compilation of Ron Paul's debate highlights is available for you. Ron Paul at GOP debate, defender of the Constitution. That's from InfoWars. And we've also got a link to a post-debate where all the Fox News talking heads, and it's O'Reilly and Coulter and just all those fools on that side of the fake political paradigm, and they all pile on Paul and act like it's so ridiculous that they have to somehow explain and figure out who was Keynes, and they want to pull their hair out. So again, that's fascinating, but there's still way too much time and we're not too eager to dive into the political chicanery and what's it called? I believe Daniel Abramson called it the emotional shell game or con game. But are those all of our Obamasiah updates? Yes, thank God they are. We'll grab a couple of Oregon oddities. Oregon House gives the green light to digital billboards. Oh, goody. I can't wait. More on that from the Oregonian, as well from our Boragonian. The United States Justice Department has launched a civil rights review of the Portland police and their propensity for blowing people away. We'll grab our police state updates, and there'll be even more to come at the end of this B-side, episode 221. The Chicago Red Dragon terror drills were going on. More on that from veteranstoday.com, and that does tie in with our connections and discussions about the Willis Tower and Larry Silverstein and Rahm Emanuel and Israeli spy rings and a replay of 9/11. Doomsday plane would save president and joint chiefs in apocalypse scenario. That is from nationalterroralert.com. Meanwhile, anti-war veteran arrested for dancing in the Jefferson Memorial. That, of course, is Adam Kokesh, now of Russia Today's Adam versus the Man. Airline disturbance causes F-16s to scramble in the skies over D.C. Again, from nationalterroralert.com. Amazing story from Cryptagon. Miami police smashed mobile phones belonging to people who witnessed a shooting. One witness hid his phone's memory card in his mouth, and that is how the video of half a dozen police unloading on a guy in the middle of the street in Miami while people go, they're going to kill that. They're killing that guy. That's like something out of a movie, and it's amazing, and I don't know what the word is, that the kid was able to hide a SIM card in his mouth and get this video out is heartening, I suppose. Woman screams she was molested by TSA agent. That is from Raw Story and Raw Replay, and unfortunately, this is a Media Monarchy listener. The guy who shot this video, Ryan, in Arizona, this is unfortunately his experience at an airport, and this concerns his mom, and ultimately this concerns all of us. Strange things going on in the town of Quartzsite, Arizona. We have some stories from beforeitsnews.com and parkerpioneer.net. Quartzsite, Arizona police chief scandal. Quartzsite mayor arrested and released, and special Quartzsite council meeting on police department. Strange things afoot. Meanwhile, on the good side, LAPD commission puts the brakes on red light cameras. More on that from CBS Los Angeles. For an anarchist, details of life as an FBI target. That's from the New York Times about our surveillance nation. And UN agreement should have all gun owners up in arms. And that is an op-ed on Forbes written by Larry Bell. We now move, I believe, to our War Whores updates. Real-life mercenaries to star in Blackwater, the video game. And that is unfortunately not The Onion. Many weapons, that is miniature weapons, are sought by the Pentagon for a new era of warfare. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Big Five defense contractors not hurt by their multiple cases of misconduct. That's from AllGov. State Department blocks audit of Iraq police training program. And KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, made illegal campaign contributions to Lyndon Johnson in 1941. Meanwhile, our own U.S. Congress has voted against Libya funding. More on that from the French agency press, actually doing their job for once. And a piece from The Guardian that we're going to go into a little bit of greater detail. Secret U.S. and Afghanistan talks could see troops stay for decades. American and Afghan officials are locked in increasingly acrimonious secret talks about a long-term security agreement, which is likely to see U.S. troops, spies, and air power based in the troubled country for decades. Though not publicized, negotiations have been underway for more than a month to secure a strategic partnership agreement which would include an American presence beyond the end of 2014, the agreed date for all 130,000 combat troops to leave, despite continuing public debate in Washington and among other members of the 49-nation coalition fighting in Afghanistan about the speed of the withdrawal. American officials admit that although Hillary Clinton, the U.S. Secretary of State, recently said Washington did not want any permanent bases in Afghanistan, her phrasing allows a variety of possible arrangements. There are U.S. troops in various countries for some considerable lengths of time, which are not there permanently, a U.S. official told The Guardian. British troops, NATO officials say, will also remain in Afghanistan long past the end of 2014, largely in training or mentoring roles. Although they will not be combat troops, that does not mean they will not take part in combat. Mentors could regularly fight alongside Afghan troops, for example. Senior NATO officials also predict that the insurgency in Afghanistan will continue after 2014. And that's what happens when you fund your enemy because you want to play both ends against the middle while eking out and stealing all of the resources, i.e. gold, oil, and drugs from these nations. DOD officials discuss using a virus and a vaccine to manipulate DNA and eliminate religion. More specifically, the religion of Islam. This video is over on alexanderhiggins.com, and it's several years old, and it's just, you can tell, on old videotape, and it has the feeling of just like you've seen Bill Gates talk about eugenics and vaccines. It's the same sort of cold, scientific, Malthusian, eugenics-obsessed manipulation that's going on, and it's only slowly becoming known. Our last note of War Horrors is a long and sad and unfortunate one, and we return to it time and time again, and we always say, even if you believe in these ridiculous wars that are always based on lies and false flag attacks, even if you believe in these things, you should still be up in arms that we can't even take care of our boys and girls when they come home. Hundreds of rape cases mishandled by the Veterans Administration.
Oh, this morning we sadly report how the Department of Veterans Affairs has once again failed the men and women it's supposed to serve. Take a look at these disturbing numbers from a new government report. 284 sexual assaults reported in the VA system over a three-year period. And even more shocking, many of those cases not reported to the VA leaders who could have done something about it. The cases include rape, inappropriate touching, and forceful medical exams. And it wasn't just patients. Employees were among the victims as well as the attackers. Both men and women were attacked. And once again, I want to remind you, this is the same VA that put thousands of veterans at risk over the last couple of years because of dirty surgical instruments. Congressman Jeff Miller is on the House Veterans Affairs Committee, obviously reacting to this story. You know, Congressman, we have talked about the medical mistakes for years, particularly on this news program, but you don't think malicious intent when it comes to those types of stories. Now you've got the lack of safeguards at the VA taking on a whole new meaning with sexual assault. So, you know, were doctors sexually abusing veterans? Do we know exactly the details of who was doing what?
Well, the GAO report doesn't go into specifics as to who it was, but we do know that it was patient on patient, patient to employee, employee to patient. So it was the myriad of people within the system. The thing that concerns a lot of us greatly, besides the fact that the sexual assaults occurred, was that they did not report it to the upper level folks. So people like Secretary Shinseki is basically unaware of these issues because they're not being reported as required by regulation.
So let me ask you, those who knew about this and could have done something about it, how are you going to hold them accountable?
Well, one of the things that Congress does, and our committee in particular, with our Oversight and Investigation Committee, is to look exactly in depth as to what occurred. I mean, we have the GAO report that was actually requested by the House Veterans Affairs Committee that will be the starting point for us. So we have Anne-Marie Burkle from New York, who is going to be the lead with the Health Subcommittee. We're having a hearing this afternoon, but I think we probably will bring the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee in and actually have joint hearings with the two together.
Well, what's sad is we've heard the stories and we've talked about how sexual assaults have not been reported out in, you know, in country and within the military, and now we're hearing about it in the VA, where, you know, vets are supposed to be getting treated and taken care of. So are you going to push a change in how these cases, sexual assault cases, are handled from the very beginning and reported to the higher ups?
Oh, absolutely. I think it already is required that it be reported. For some reason, there's a culture within the system. I was in Miami last week and was discussing other issues, and you talked about some of the sterilization issues that have taken place with medical equipment. There's a culture within the system that people at the lower level are afraid to bring things to the top for fear of losing their jobs. And that's not an acceptable issue at all, especially when you've got criminal intent with sexual assaults like the GAO report has brought forward. And remember, there are hundreds of residential facilities out there, and right now they've only studied in depth about five of them.
Mm. So can we, or will we, see prosecution of these attackers?
Well, we want to know, in fact, what has happened with the people that have perpetrated these assaults, the rapes, as the GAO has called some of them. What has happened with these employees? Are some of these people still within the system? I don't know. The only way to find out is to ask the question. And if they're still there, then not only do those people need to go and need to be processed, but certainly their supervisors need to go as well.
Final question, Congressman, before we let you go. How can vets be assured that they can still go to the VA for proper treatment and not fear being attacked?
Well, I can say that there is complete focus by the VA. I have talked with some of the undersecretaries. I want to talk with the secretary this week. It is not their grandfather's VA system. The health care that's provided, the mental health care that's being provided now by the VA is second to none. But when you have things like this that rock the very foundation of the VA, I can understand why some veterans would have questions whether they should go into the system or not.
We'll be looking to you to see the changes implemented, that's for sure. Congressman Jeff Miller will continue to follow the story. Appreciate your time today, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, God, I wish that were all, but I missed a couple of War Horse headlines, and they are important. $6.6 billion of taxpayer money vanished in Iraq. Missing Iraq money may have been stolen, auditors say. Labeled the biggest heist in American history, about $6.6 billion delivered to Iraq by the United States after the 2003 invasion has disappeared. The money was part of a $12 billion in cash that was flown to Iraq on U.S. military planes, presumably to help get the country back on its feet after the toppling of Saddam Hussein. The money had been held in a special account by the Federal Reserve during years of international sanctions imposed on Iraq. But once the American military took control of Iraq, the Bush administration decided to flood the country with money to stabilize the local economy. Stuart Bowen Jr., the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, conducted audits to find out what became of the $12 billion, and during the investigation, he discovered that U.S. officials often failed to keep track of how the funds were dispersed to Iraqi agencies. In an interview with the Los Angeles Times, Bowen said the missing money could well represent the largest theft of funds in national history. He later backed off on this assessment, saying his remark was taken out of context. Iraq's government is threatening to take the U.S. to court to reclaim the lost money, which came from Iraqi oil sales, seized assets, and surplus funds from the United Nations Oil for Food program. Last summer, the Iraq Special Inspector General reported that he was unable to properly account for more than 95% of $9.1 billion in Iraqi oil money used by the U.S. for rebuilding the country. Auditor clarifies comment about missing cash in Iraq. It always makes me extra sad when people who come out and speak a little bit of truth don't have the courage of their convictions to stand by what they say. When the heat comes down, they back off. The other last bit of War Horse news. We grab hat tip to, again, Cryptogon.com, but it comes by way of CNBC and Changeluya. First Lady wants Hollywood to excrete even more pro-military propaganda. Michelle Obama wants to see more stories of military families on TV and in movies, so she came to Hollywood to do something about it. The First Lady met with members of the writers, producers, directors, and actors unions at the Writers Guild Theater to discuss Joining Forces, an initiative aimed at increasing public consciousness and support for military families. Obama said she created the initiative with Jill Biden to help the nation understand, quote, that when our country goes to war, we have families that are serving right along with them, end quote. During Monday's hour-long program, Michelle Obama shared the stage with a National Guard pilot, a retired soldier, and the wife of an Army officer. Writer-director J.J. Abrams, whose film Super 8 topped the weekend box office, moderated the discussion. Isn't that interesting? And isn't it interesting how we don't have enough military propaganda? There's not enough collusion between the private military contractors and the quote-unquote entertainment industrial complex. But wouldn't you know it, right as we leave the War Horse, it segues perfectly and Sometimes I don't even plan it out this way. We move into West Virginia worry, where West Virginia plays major role in J.J. Abrams' Super 8. The Paramount movie was filmed in Weirton, West Virginia, and it opened last week, and it topped the box office, and I did go check it out, and it probably just made me even more homesick, but let's grab a quick bit from West Virginia Public Broadcasting on Super 8.
Paramount Pictures shot its movie in Weirton last fall. In the movie Super 8, Weirton is portrayed as a fictional steel town called Lillian, Ohio. Weirton residents held a special parade on Sunday to celebrate the upcoming release. Local United Steelworkers president Mark Liptis says the downtown streets are filled with movie reminders.
Some of it's there, some of it's not there. Some of it was painted, that's still there. But the community, it looks better, you know. We had, they opened like a little ice cream place downtown, and it's doing real well. They got a Lillian Steel t-shirts and, you know, signs that you want to buy Super 8 props. Very much the theme of the movie is still on Main Street.
Super 8 is written and directed by J.J. Abrams and produced by Steven Spielberg. Glyptus says the community is proud to have its steelmaking roots featured in the film.
Many of the retirees, many of the employees auditioned for certain parts. They asked for old cars, and the guys that owned the cars drove them, so they're going to be part of the movie. And they'll see their car, and they may see themselves in the movie itself. It's hard to tell how it's going to what the final form of it's going to be, but definitely a great deal of enthusiasm, excitement.
The plot of the movie centers around a group of friends who are shooting their own monster movie. The kids see a train derail and something that looks like an alien escape from the wreckage. Suddenly, strange, terrifying things begin to happen in their community.
It has escaped.
Sheriff?
It has a plan.
Fuse box electrical systems ripped out.
Same thing over here. Somebody took the damn wires out.
I've got 9 people missing. There's something else going on.
The West Virginia Film Office is partnering with the city and Paramount for an advanced screening. Super 8 will be shown to a select group of people at Carmike Cinemas in nearby Steubenville, Ohio, tonight. One of the actors in the movie, Ryan Lee, is expected to attend. Pam Haynes is executive director of the West Virginia Film Office.
Paramount requested the Steubenville location because of the, you know, high-tech equipment that's available at that particular theater. And so we're very proud to be a part of that. And there's a small invitation list only, and then there were about 168 tickets that were given out during a raffle at the Sunday celebration.
West Virginia is attracting more big-name productions, including ABC's Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution, We Are Marshall, the 20th Century Fox film Unstoppable, and a film that will be released in September called Warrior, starring Nick Nolte. It was shot at the former West Virginia Penitentiary in Moundsville. Haynes says the state offers filmmakers a tax credit. She says Paramount is the largest production that has participated in the program.
We are starting to see an increase in interest in filming here, mainly because of the tax incentive program, but because of Super 8 in particular, we are receiving an extreme amount of attention. You know, where J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg film, other people follow. So we've already received 4 requests just in the past week since the Super 8 started doing its major publicity push.
Super 8 is a PG-13 production. The movie will open in theaters nationwide tomorrow. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Carrie Brown in Wheeling.
So, like I said, I did go check out the Super 8 film. I did a double feature, actually, last weekend. We went to go see the new Woody Allen movie, Midnight in Paris, and then followed it up with Super 8. And it was enjoyable, and it was pretty much like a Goonies throwback and crossed Goonies with an evil E.T. and make it longer and super loud, and you're somewhere close to it. Our other bits of West Virginia worry: hundreds marching 5 days to save West Virginia's Blair Mountain. This comes from the Associated Press. On this steep-sided mountain in West Virginia's southern coal fields, hundreds will retrace the steps of miners who waged the nation's largest armed uprising since the Civil War, hoping 90 years later to protect the site of that bloody battle. The protesters will retell the story of the 7,500 to 10,000 unionizing coal miners who fought for principles that helped shape today's U.S. labor laws, and they hope keep Blair Mountain from becoming just another barren, flat-topped strip mine. this story goes on, and interestingly enough, do they make a reference to it? I don't immediately see it, but there's a documentary that just opened connected to this that I believe is even playing in New York City, and it's called The Last Mountain. We should also note that while that is referring to southern West Virginia, Super 8 was filmed in Weirton, West Virginia, and that's way super north in the northern panhandle. I don't know that I've ever actually even been there. Morgantown, the home of West Virginia University, WVU, passes a fracking ban. More on that from WVMetroNews.com. Parkersburg, West Virginia, settles an injury lawsuit, $2,500 to a victim of police brutality. And our last two notes of West Virginia worry, jobs and pay on the rise in West Virginia. That's from WVGazette.com. And surprise, surprise, state mismanaged $38 million in weatherization funds. So whether it's relatively podunk West Virginia mismanaging their weatherization funds, or the multi-billion to trillion-dollar schemes going on in Iraq, it's the same thing all around, and they'll blame it on incompetence, but ultimately there is a larger scheme at work. And it does remind me, I did watch the first installment of the new Adam Curtis documentary, All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, and I implore you to go check it out because it's fantastic and makes a lot of interesting connections in a pretty succinct and well-put-together kind of way. But I digress. We have to get to our final post on this B-side, episode 221 from MediaMonarchy.com, June 18th, 2011. FBI agents get leeway to push privacy bounds. The FBI power to snoop has been expanded yet again. The FBI is giving significant new powers to its roughly 14,000 agents, allowing them more leeway to search databases, go through household trash, or use surveillance teams to scrutinize the lives of people who have attracted their attention. The FBI soon plans to issue a new edition of its manual called the Domestic Investigations and Operations Guide. We have the link to the 2008, I believe, edition. To my knowledge, they have not unveiled this new edition yet, but it's up on Scribd as it is currently. Continuing. The new rules add to several measures taken over the past decade to give agents more latitude as they search for signs of criminal or terrorist activity. And really, in this day and age, what's the difference?
Americans better watch what they put in their trash. The FBI has given around 14,000 agents more scope to observe so-called people of interest and more leeway to search databases and even examine household trash.
To go into my garbage, to go onto the internet, I mean, you know, I know Uncle Sam is watching, but I think this goes a little bit too far.
Sonia Silbert, director of the Washington Peace Center, says the new rules infringe on privacy rights of U.S. citizens.
It's pretty scary because it brings it home that any of us can be targeted. Whether or not you are part of a peace organization, whether you're part of an animal rights organization, whether you're just somebody whose name sounds like somebody that they're looking for, that we can all be targets.
There's been no court decision or change in privacy laws. Rather, the FBI updated its 2008 Domestic Investigations and Operations Guide to give agents more leeway in investigations. Under the new rules, agents will be allowed to search databases of people who have attracted their attention without making a record of the decision. Currently, agents can search databases without real evidence of wrongdoing, but they must officially open an inquiry. The FBI says it's too time-consuming to open formal inquiries before running quick checks on databases.
There's a potential to be for abuse, but there's also less and less ability to be held accountable for abuse when it does happen.
Also under the new guidelines, agents can use lie detector tests on potential informants and search through their rubbish to put pressure on that person to assist the government in investigating others. Also, highly trained surveillance squads will be able to be used multiple times during an assessment of a target rather than a single time. American Muslims have reason to be concerned. A recent report by a human rights group says in pursuing domestic terrorism cases, the U.S. government targets and entraps Muslim community members. And in February, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit against the FBI, alleging it used a paid informant to infiltrate several mosques and indiscriminately collect personal information on possibly thousands of Muslim Americans. The new rules add to several measures taken over the past decade to give FBI agents more latitude as they search for signs of criminal or terrorist activity. Rhonda Pence, Press TV, Washington.
Washington.
Searching through the garbage indeed, and that unfortunately feels like what we have to do here on MediaMonarchy.com. Let's get our last couple of related police state updates. SWAT Team Mania, the war against the American citizen, that is on Lou Rockwell. Residents surprised by sounds of fighter jets in Taunton, Massachusetts airspace. That's from the Taunton Gazette. Training exercise, explosions at Sunny Point, North Carolina. That's from WECT.com. Suspicious item in Pentagon scare disrupted. We grabbed that from CBS News, and when we went into the studio yesterday morning, as that story started to unfold, as we reported to you, surprise, surprise, he was in the military. Our last note, Black Hawk helicopters deployed for TSA security exercise across Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia on June 15th. TSA and several state, federal, and local agencies participated in a scheduled exercise designed to enhance security in the Ohio, West Virginia area. The TSA partnered with local law enforcement to conduct thousands of similar operations from coast to coast. And that's how they roll. The TSA ultimately taking over everywhere, as I'm looking to plan a trip to go back east to visit family pretty soon. I'm looking at a way to try and avoid the naked body scanners, and I don't know if there's a way I can do it, so I may have to opt out. If we glance at Google News as we bring this B-side episode 221 to a close, just to kind of read some of the other things that are going on in the zeitgeist into the record so that these episodes can kind of act as a kind of timestamp and make a record of what is going on and what's swirling around. Obama, Bonner, win match, collect $2 prize. Yes, the golf summit goes great as bosses Obama and Bonner beat Biden and Kasich. Another show, another bit of garbage, another bit of fake, phony competition for the plebs to watch out there on their TV, whether it's Dancing with Idiots or fake games between our phony leaders. Some of the other things going on is Casey Anthony's defense in chaos. It was interesting when I first looked at Google News this morning. The Casey Anthony show trial wasn't in the news, but the other one from Italy, the Knox trial, was in the news. So even to fill that vacuum of a lack of news, because it was Saturday morning in America and no court cases were going on, we had to flip overseas so we could watch this other salacious trial go on that everybody worries about, and all the idiots buying their chemically modified food in the stupid corporate grocery stores while they're going through the checkout and reading the bullshit tabloids about these bullshit stories. Oh my God, a pretty white girl was killed. That's the most important news story in the world. Meanwhile, NATO airstrike mistakenly hit Libyan rebels. Greeks march to protest austerity program. Representative Ron Paul wins straw poll at GOP conference in New Orleans. And the Los Angeles Times asked the question, should food irradiation return to the table? Now, those are my top stories on Google News. I think they may be altered a little bit for my taste preferences. But something else we'll quickly do, because I always want to do it on the live show, and we just never have the time to do it. We're always just scraping the very end of the 2 hours. I want to hop over quickly to twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, because there are more things now posted there since doing the show yesterday, and I just want to keep kind of drawing your attention there, because I think it's a great little outlet, and as we noted yesterday, hasn't been bought up by a multinational corporation with connections to the inbred eugenics-obsessed elite like all the others seem to be, but it's probably only a matter of time. The latest on cyberspacewar.com, the best pictures from the June 15th lunar eclipse, 10 sci-fi predictions that came true, and telectroscope to televirtuality. We also have a tweet about Ron Paul winning the 2012 Republican straw poll in New Orleans, where we note now if only it was a no party affiliation 2012 straw poll vote. Man added to official 9/11 victims list. Yet to be added to the victims list is civil liberties, habeas corpus, and posse comitatus. Portland Reservoir Portland Reservoir drained after drunk man urinates in it. costing nearly $36,000. I grabbed this from Time magazine, and they even have an interview with the 21-year-old offender who said he thought it was a sewage plant. Boing Boing has a great literary fail shirt that has a quote from Shakespeare that it cites as being by Edgar Allan Poe, with a portrait next to it of Mark Twain, and it's quite entertaining. We also have just posted to MediaMonarchy.com, and everything posted there tweets out just like everything else in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. But episode number 6 of RemedyRadio.com, A Valedictorian Speaks About Unschooling. That and so much more is available for you, my friends, in the independent, commercial-free, non-corporate, DIY, lone wolf Media Monarchy Kingdom. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. This has been the B-Side, episode 221 on June 18th, 2011. And as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.